percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
It continues to be really interesting. All sorts of sightings, all sorts of people talking about UFOs and Bigfoot and unexplained that before was kind of like, you know, brushed aside, and it was, if there was a sighting, it was maybe 30-second soundbite and that's it. But this stuff seems to be amplifying. And of course, I like to follow it. So the latest thing I found was a wonderful video on YouTube, Skinwalker Ranch, A Real Perspective. This is one of the former Bass investigators, Chris Marks, on site. I think he was there about 6 years or so. And he was tired of hearing people talking about what's going on there who have never even been there. They've maybe been, or even, you know, spent a day or two and then and left and then told all the stories. He said, look, this has to come out. And actually, in this interview, we discover that he's been collaborating with some of the other people he worked with while he was there and comparing stories of what's happening after they did their time at Skinwalker Ranch. And one of the interesting things is once they had all these paranormal encounters, he still has paranormal encounters in his own kitchen to this day. So the story's on YouTube. I'll put a link on the site, Wendy's Coffee House, and you can check it out. But this is the kind of stuff that's now, I think, getting some more, in some way, shape, or form, credibility because the people who have experienced it are talking about it. And they're adding more weight to the stories instead of just somebody third, fourth, fifth, sixth hand sharing a piece of gossip far on down the line. Another person who has a whole lot of information, firsthand and gossip and third-hand encounters, Stan Gordon. And Stan Gordon, if you haven't been on his website, this is a plethora of all sorts of stuff. He also has books. He's in Pennsylvania, and he started, I think, 1959, a very good year. He started studying UFOs and mysterious events and the whole nine yards, part of the MUFON group there. Stan, you are a prolific investigator. All of this stuff, you've covered everything from the sightings of the Thunderbird I saw, also UFOs, Bigfoot, and everything else. At this point, you guys have been having a lot of activity, even recently.
Oh, yeah, it's been very busy here. Yeah, this year is actually marked 60 years of research for me, and it's something that interests a lot of people that in all the years I've been doing this, I've never personally seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself. I've interviewed thousands of witnesses. I've seen a lot of evidence, but I've never had my own personal encounter. But, my hotline's been open since 1969, and it never stops ringing between email reports and phone reports coming in. Very active, but in the last 2 years, starting in January of last year and continuing right through the last few days, we've had the largest surge of UFO sightings, Bigfoot encounters, other cryptid encounters, other phenomena from many areas of Pennsylvania, a lot of in the southwest corner of Pennsylvania, but many of these have been very, very interesting reports. And we may have a little time to talk about the massive wave here in 1973 and 74, when we began to realize that there was a lot more to Bigfoot than a lot of people realize, and a lot more than I realized about that time. And these kind of reports are continuing to show up as well, even in the last year.
Okay, and then you show yourself at the site of some of these where people have reported activity or something has happened. So you actually go out on scene to investigate some of these things, right?
Well, I started my first research group back in 1970. That was a Westmoreland County UFO study group. We were a volunteer research group. We started small in the Pittsburgh area, and I was amazed who I got involved. I had scientists and engineers from Alcoa and Westinghouse and Gulf and from colleges and universities, and many of the people working with me did it anonymously because of their positions. But we did this around our full-time jobs, and we were responding to cases 24 hours a day. By 1973... we had extended to cover the whole state of Pennsylvania, and we were extremely busy with reports coming in all the time. And we were surprised as word got out who we were getting referrals to. We were getting referrals from the news media, from the state police, and many different agencies. So we were busy day and night investigating reports. And then 1973 comes around, and first we have the largest UFO outbreak ever documented, with hundreds and hundreds of UFO cases across Pennsylvania all year. And then in the summer of 73, we had the largest Bigfoot outbreak ever documented, went into early 74, and that's when some very strange details began to come to our attention that we weren't out there looking for. So you got to remember, 1973, there's no internet, there's no cell phones. It was a whole different time period, and when people saw something unusual or were frightened, they'd generally call the police or some other agency, and that's how a lot of the reports were initially coming in. And I had always believed up to that point, having been involved in investigating cases prior to that in Pennsylvania. I've been out in the field since 1965, since the Keksberg UFO incident, and interviewed a lot of people who claimed to have seen UFOs and Bigfoot prior to that. And I always felt that Bigfoot, from what I knew, was likely, if it existed, and I talked to many credible witnesses, that it was some type of unknown animal, some type of unknown primate. But some very strange things began to come to our attention during that 73-74 outbreak. And one of the first things we began to notice, our teams would get out to some of the locations soon after the incidents, within minutes to hours, and there'd be trails of footprints with large strides and various ground conditions, including fresh snow. And in some cases, you had this large series of tracks that would suddenly stop, vanish, and disappear, which made absolutely no sense, and there's no way it could have been fabricated under the conditions we found. Then we began to see an odd pattern. We'd have a UFO sighting in a particular area. Within minutes to hours to days later, we'd have a Bigfoot sighting, or vice versa. And then we had amazing reports beginning to come in from widespread areas, with UFOs and Bigfoot seen together at the same time and place. And, I mean, we could talk for hours and hours about some of those cases, but one case in particular, and it's a case that's been written up all over the world, it's probably one of the strangest cases on record, occurred October 25th, 73, up in Fayette County, Pennsylvania, which still continues to be one of the most active areas in the country, especially along the Chestnut Ridge mountain range, for UFOs and paranormal experiences and Bigfoot and all kind of phenomena. But on that evening, I got a call from a state trooper from that Uniontown barracks who had just came back from investigating this multiple witness UFO landing with a huge UFO on the ground or right above it and two Bigfoot standing there at the same time. And I can go into a lot more detail, but anyhow, that's when things began to come to our attention, that there was a lot more to the Bigfoot phenomena than any of us ever realized.
And see, that's what I've heard from people who have experienced either close contact or telepathic communication, something being in the neighborhood where most, where there are Sasquatch sightings, that they're saying that there is a connection. Kiwani Lapsuritis, one of the guys I've interviewed, who says they are telepathic and he's been communicating with them for years, and other people have that same kind of and my own experience, I went to Mena, Arkansas, thinking I was going to look for crystals at Borg Camp Crystal Mine. And that is a very highly active Sasquatch area. I thought about crystals when I got there. Then they said, oh, by the way, and showed me a log up in a tree that had happened like the night before. So they also had sightings of beams and that kind of stuff. And a lot of stuff is ongoing right now. So that's an excellent place if you have a chance to connect dots to take a trip. But these kinds of things, when you first started finding out that the UFO and the Sasquatch had a connection, we're going to save it for the next break, but I want to know how that changed your research and how it changed the storyline, because then you had more, I think, ammo to work with. And not only that, walking the path of a track or a trail and all of a sudden the trail disappears, that's what I have had other people tell me leads them to believe that they are multidimensional, that this isn't something that's just occurring on our same plane. We are unable to track it because it just basically zips out of our timeline. Does that make sense?
Yes, and back in that time period, as all these reports are coming in, and I'm looking back at all the cases I was aware of, and I'm thinking, it just something doesn't make sense here. Where are the bodies? It's like the skeptics say, where are the bodies?
Right.
And then some of the reports in 73, 74 began to get much more unusual. So going back to some of those reports, up in Fayette County, in, I believe it was November of 73.
Okay, hold on, hold on.
A man is walking his hunting dogs.
Just a minute.
He had a lot of property way up in the mountains.
Stan, take a break. Hold on. We're going to take a quick break. Got to do some commercials, okay? And then we're going to come
Very
back.
Very good.
All right, we'll come back to that hunting story with the guy walking his dogs. It's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. It's one of those things where once you start connecting dots, then you realize the story is much bigger than you think. And that's what happened, I think, when people started realizing they were seeing Sasquatch and UFOs together. My guest, Stan Gordon, has been investigating since he was 10. has been investigating this stuff. I mean, once you get the bite, you just it's like, what is going on? So you were talking about the guy who was walking his dog, the hunter.
Yeah, he's running his hunting dogs on his private property way up in the mountains. It's dark. He sees this figure running ahead of him, and he yells out because somebody's trespassing on his property and realizes this is a 7-8-foot-tall, hairy, almost ape-like creature. He grabs his pistol, starts shooting at this thing, and what I was told was that he hit it. It physically vanished in front of him, but he could still hear it running away, but he couldn't see it any further.
Wow.
And then the case that convinced me, and as reluctant as I am to say it, but many other cases since then, and I'm aware of both in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country and around the world, that for a lack of a better term, these things may well be interdimensional. And this was a case that happened up in that same general area, February 6, 1974. And a lot of the listeners will remember that time period. There was a big national trucker strike. There was a lot of violence on the highways across the country, and in Pennsylvania, the state police and the National Guard were patrolling together. So they both responded to this incident. I couldn't get up there until the next morning because I couldn't get gas in my town. And this woman was way up in the mountains in a little cabin home. She lived there all her life. She knew animals well, was pretty much fearless, was a good shot. She was sitting there watching TV when she heard this noise on her front porch. She had some pop cans out there, and someone was knocking the pop cans around. Well, a few weeks prior, there was a pack of wild dogs came through, and she figured the dogs are back, so she thought, you know what, I'll grab my shotgun, and I'll just fire over their head and shoot the dogs over their head and just scare the dogs away. So anyhow, she loads her shotgun. She turns on the switch for the outside porch light, opens the door, and steps out. But there's no dogs, but only a few feet in front of her is this huge, hairy Bigfoot with his arms straight up over his head. And what does she do? She fires right into it.
No. Oh.
She said there's this bright flash of light, like the flash on a camera, and the creature physically disappears right in front of her. But that's not the end of the story. Her in-laws lived 100 feet away. They heard the gunshot. They called her, asked her what she was shooting at. She tried to explain to him. Her son-in-law grabs his sidearm, his pistol, starts walking down the dark road, said he's surrounded by 4 or 5 hairy people with eyes like coals of fire, starting shooting at him randomly, runs into the house, and over the trees, over the woods at the same time, is this large object, like a large Christmas ornament. So that's when they called the state police. And I talked to the primary investigator, and he said, by the time we found the place up there, it was a long while we got there, everything was done. But, he said, something very strange happened there. That was based on the animal reactions, which is something I have seen.
Yeah.
And I said, years ago, you can fool people, but you can't fool the animals. Very, very commonly, in many of the Bigfoot encounters, we see reactions in horses and cattle and cats and other animals, but very prominent with even the most vicious dogs. And very commonly, when these creatures are close to the dogs were like paralyzed in fear. They don't bark, they shake, they cower, they hide. Sometimes they won't eat right for a day or two later.
Yeah.
And that's something you can't fabricate. Now, I remember the trooper told me, he said, when he got there, they had several big dogs there. And I'm not sure if it was an Eskimo Spitzer German Shepherd. One was in a cage. The dogs wouldn't move or make a sound. He put his hand and tried to pull one of the animals out. Dog wouldn't even move. Should have ripped his arm off. And when I got up there early the next morning, when I got gas, everything was back to normal. But that was the case, among others, that convinced me that we're dealing with something that's a lot more than an unknown animal. There's more to the phenomena than any of us realize.
My guest again, Gordon, you are, Stan Gordon, one of the people who has been fortunate enough to follow these kinds of stories for years and years and years. This has to be, I think, you know, there's something more to it. There has to be another way we can get to the next level. Any ideas?
Well, yeah, the one thing I want to point out is, one, I'm not suggesting, because I don't have the answers. I don't think anybody does. Right now, I think we're dealing with something that's real, well beyond our present scientific understanding. We're getting some clues. I believe it's energy related to a lot of the phenomena we're dealing with. But I'm not suggesting that Bigfoot is a passenger riding around the spaceship from another planet, because
right.
we don't know for sure what the UFOs are we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I said years ago, there's indication we're dealing with more than one origin to the unknown category. So maybe a small percentage are extraterrestrial. Some of these could be unknown natural phenomena, but more and more, in a lot of the UFO reports I've been investigating for years and years, including in recent weeks, which we're having some amazing reports even in daylight, people are seeing what appeared to be very large structured craft, low to the ground. And in some cases, these things are suddenly vanishing, fading out, evaporating, appearing and disappearing. Some cases over the years, these things physically change physical form in front of people. They suddenly appear and disappear. I mean, it's just amazing the reports that are coming in. And these reports are coming in not from people who are interested in UFOs, but this from the general public, from widespread areas, from people who don't even know each other.
Yeah. 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 They can't compare notes. What I find fascinating is that there's also some correlations. That's why I brought up the Skinwalker Ranch stuff, because one of the investigators, as I was talking about the story that you can see on YouTube, he brings up the fact that he had an encounter with a skinwalker. He was watching a guy up on a cliff far away, saw the man up there, and was worried because the guy was standing kind of close to the edge, and he wasn't sure if he was a hunter or, you know, why he was there. And as he watched, the man shifted, shape-shifted, into a wolf. And he said he called to report this to his supervisor at the time and said, I'm not imagining. I watched it. I know. He walked the path about 2 miles back to the ranch, the house. And when he got there, that wolf was there with him, watching. So he's watching the wolf. The wolf is watching him. And then the big storm, which is interesting because the 411 cases always talk about these big storms. Anyway, the storm comes in. He holds up for a while. He thinks maybe if he goes back out, he might be able to find some kind of indication. He said there were patches that were soft dirt. And in the soft dirt, this is where that guy was standing. He was lucky because there's the soft dirt. Well, he finds the tracks. And there are tracks, according to him, that are human. And then they go into wolf. And they're gone. So
yep.
That's his story, and it dovetails with the stuff that you're getting in terms of the Sasquatch and being, you know, something that just disappears. So I want to come back and talk about some of the other stuff that you find that you were finding before we ever heard anything about Skinwalker Ranch, or at least publicly heard anything about Skinwalker Ranch. Again, this is all sorts of unusual, unexplained. A couple of books that you can get from Stan Gordon. One is The Mysterious Pennsylvania, really mysterious Pennsylvania, also Silent Invasion. And you have the new one. What is the new one of the newest ones?
Well, the latest book I did is called Astonishing Encounters, Pennsylvania's Unknown Creatures. So it gets into not only Bigfoot, but the giant thunderbird sightings, black panthers that are seen around here, all kind of other cryptids. And the more I look into these reports, there's some similarities in them. And it may well be that all these phenomena, all these creatures are somehow related to whatever they're originating from.
Okay, and what is it, stangordon.com? I've got stangordon.info pulled up.
It's stangordon.info, I-N-F-O.
Okay, wanted to make sure I hadn't missed a link on there. And then you also had another site earlier where the archive site, tons of information.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Correct.
So Stan Gordon's UFO Anomaly Zone is the website, 24-hour UFO and Bigfoot cryptid sightings hotline. So if you know of something, wherever you are on the planet, it doesn't hurt to put your sighting in, all right? Because there's so much going on right now. It's just mind-boggling, and that's what I like. So stick around. We're going to talk more about the comparison between the Skinwalker Ranch events and what Stan has seen over the years and how those two are kind of intertwined. I do think we're dealing with multidimensional issues. I think ghosts are not what we think. I think Sasquatch isn't what we think. UFOs, reading the stuff from people who have had these encounters and having my own encounters. We have to have a bigger box of categories to work with. And we're not there yet. So stick around. I'll put links again on Wendy's Coffee House on the blog site. And if you miss the shows, you can go back and catch them. Audio Boom, that's where all the archives are. Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Stan Gordon, has been researching strange occurrences in Pennsylvania since 1959. Okay, so a long time, long enough to have had all sorts of encounters, and some of the books, the stories he includes about UFOs, Bigfoot, Black Panthers, Thunderbirds, a weird and unusual, unexplained encounters, the whole plethora. If you want to report something, go onto his website and include it. 24 hours, he takes the UFO, Bigfoot, cryptid sightings. And if you are anywhere, you know, interested at all in this, then you can also check some of the events that are reported. Now, you also, I'm going to digress here for a minute. You also had that Kexburg. Did you do a film on that, the Kexburg incident?
I actually did an award-winning video documentary called Kexburg, The Untold Story, which is still out there on DVD. I was the principal investigator of the Kexburg case. I was 16 when it happened. And I've been documenting it now for 54 years, still getting information on, believe it or not. I got a very good lead several months ago I'm following up on. And I've been working on a case for a long time.
Did they find, because they're always talking about little pieces, anomalies, mystery metal, that kind of stuff. Was there anything that they found? Because this was something, an object that crashed.
No, this object was completely intact on the ground. And people who saw it fall that afternoon, December 9th of 65, they went down into the woods right after it fell. We didn't know this at the time, but I tracked hundreds of people down. And they came across this large, metallic, acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground. And it's kind of an off-gold bronze color, no weld marks, no seams, no fuselage, but odd symbols raised off the surface in the back part of the object. And, of course, the interesting thing is, which so many people confirm, was that the military came in the small farming community within a relatively short time. Multiple witnesses confirmed it was taken out on a large military flatbed tractor trailer. And I later learned the object was taken to Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio, during early morning, next morning, early hours, stayed there for a short time, then continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with it. It's a long, long, amazing story, whatever it was. And it's still something that's open to much speculation.
Yeah, you've got a ton of information. There's some artist renderings of what the thing looked like. What I have seen from some experiencers when they draw the examples, that's something that they draw, is one of those kind of oval-shaped type of UFO. And this isn't unusual. It's just that we have no way to verify it or see what it's like. So acorn-shaped object, you said that was stored at Wright-Patterson.
It ended up at Wright-Patterson. That's what we were told, yes.
Okay. All right. So that's this is the stuff that gets tricky, is trying to figure out how, you know, where it goes, why it goes, what they do with it, and we'll never know the rest of the story, at least not, I don't think, in the near future. But it keeps us looking and saying there's more to this. You also had at the Skinwalker Ranch, we were talking about earlier, sightings. Your stories parallel some of that, and yours happened in the 70s?
Yeah, I started writing about this back in the early 70s, and so much of what was going on in Pennsylvania is so similar to the Skinwalker Ranch. And so everything you've talked about with entities, balls of light changing entities and vice versa, or one entity changed to other forms, we've heard these things before. And this is, I mean, just in the last 2 years, the reports that are coming in are amazing. And let me just quickly try to give you just a few examples. One of the things we heard about first in 73 was a case north of Pittsburgh where two witnesses saw a very tall, white-haired Bigfoot running across a road towards the woods, but in one of its hands it had a glowing ball of light. And a short time later, an object came across the sky, projected a beam of light down into the woods where the creature ran into. And then we had that case in Uniontown we talked about earlier with UFO and Bigfoot there. But earlier this year outside of Pittsburgh, early morning, a man's looking out his backyard. There's a lot of woods back there. He sees a small Bigfoot, about 4 to 5 feet tall, goes across his yard, enters a particular area of the woods, and he said within seconds of the exact location, a small sphere of light came out, very low off the ground, disappeared, reappeared, projected a long beam of light along that area, and it disappeared. Some of the other cases on a four-lane toll road here in Westmoreland County, November of last year, I talked to the driver of a car. He had a passenger. Another car pulled up next to him that evening, and they were stopped in the middle of this highway, had their high beams on. Here's this 8-foot-tall, very broad-shouldered creature standing there, and he said the strangest thing was it never walked on a road. It physically disappeared right in front of us. Mm. And, I mean, these are the kind of things we're getting. And last winter, this winter, we've gotten pictures in. We have videos in of footprints in the snow, very clearly focused video from North Huntington, Pennsylvania, early morning. People awakened to 16-inch footprints, 4 to 5 foot stride between their tracks, went across their yard, got to the playground, suddenly stopped and vanished and disappeared. I mean, this is just a sample of some of the reports that are coming in.
Why do you think it's so active?
We don't know. It's one of those things we have no answers for. Like I said, in the last 2 years, it's been steadily active, not the huge numbers of reports we had in the 70s, but we're receiving continuous, all year round, very detailed reports. And some of these Bigfoot sightings, I mean, are very, very close range. In November last year, down in what we call the Mon Valley area, so it borders along the Monongahela River, a lot of history of Bigfoot activity and other phenomena down that area, including Thunderbird reports this year and UFO reports. A fellow was riding down the road early November of last year, pouring down rain, has his low beams on, sees something standing along the left side of the road, puts his high beams up, moves forward, and this huge, at least 7-foot-tall creature steps out onto the road, literally 5 feet in front of him, stands there with glowing red eyes, stares right into his face. And this, until it turned and moved, he couldn't see the arms and the legs at the bottom because it was so close. He followed it up a little hill, tried to load his camera up to get a picture, and he said, "It's in my headlight." Suddenly, it's gone. It just vanishes and disappears. And he said, "I know it's dark, but I had it in my headlights, and it's gone." And I was out there with our team the next day. Unfortunately, it was all covered with leaves, and it rained all night. But this poor fellow was very, very shook up, very emotional, described this thing from head to toe, very, very detailed account.
Okay, so with these kinds of accounts, do you follow up? Do you find people experiencing after effects? With some of the UFO things, people have recorded feeling ill or having some, you know, burns, that kind of thing. Do you follow that up?
In a lot of cases, we have. I mean, I've worked on some cases from 40 years ago that I'm still in touch with certain witnesses and began to find some very interesting things. And, again, too detailed to get into, but sometimes this phenomena runs into generations of families.
Yeah.
So some of these cases started, and you'll recognize that some of this is similar to some things you're reading in some of the books out there now, too. But one case of one person I'm still in touch with, she was a young girl that was missing for hours. There was a big search for her in the area. They ended up finding her right in the middle of the field. They had searched for a long time. She had no idea she was missing. Throughout her life, she had paranormal experiences, later Bigfoot encounters, cryptid encounters, UFO encounters, then her children, and now her grandchildren are experiencing the same thing.
Okay, yeah, and that's the kind of stuff I've heard about. There's a fantastic book out, John Foster, who experienced, as he started having encounters in the 50s, he didn't remember until late 80s, and when he did, it was so traumatic remembering his missing time, remembering the UFO encounters. He's an engineer, so he drew pictures. He had incredible diaries recovering his memories of these encounters, but it happened to his family. Some of them refused to talk about it. Others said they were there, remembered it, couldn't explain it. And he has details about being all of a sudden in the presence of something. Other people can't see it. And he's taken for a ride. We're going to talk more about these kinds of anomalies with these encounters. My guest again, Stan Gordon. It's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, my guest Stan Gordon, and just so many accounts to talk about. We're trying to narrow it down. I want to get back into the thing. You were mentioning the girl who went into an area, they was lost, then they found her, and she was in a place that they'd already searched. This is like the stories that they have collected for the missing 411. And that's,
yes.
You know, that's a dot, that's a link in that storyline.
Oh yeah, and there's many, many other reports. I mean, we could talk here for days and days. I was probably one of the first in the country to really get involved in alleged UFO abduction cases, which there were many here in western Pennsylvania. I mean, we could have spent just months and years on one case, and you just couldn't do that because we had so many hundreds of other cases going on. But some of them were very intriguing. And but also, you know, I wanted to bring up, you had mentioned about the gentleman, and I couldn't hear real well, where he was able to perceive or see a UFO and others could not. Is that correct?
Yes, that's John Foster. Yes.
Okay, well, I had other cases like that over the years. For example, years ago, I remember a case where there was a group of people outside, and apparently there's this large object hovering overhead, but only a couple people within the group could see it and others could not perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I began studying backgrounds of individuals years ago, but just didn't have the time or the funding to do really very deep, involved studies. But I began to find that there are certain things we just don't understand, and it may well be that certain people had certain abilities that they were able to perceive the phenomena that other people could not, or that the phenomena may have been attracted to them.
Yeah, yeah, and that makes sense. Or there's a different frequency involved where they are in on that level of receptivity with the enigma.
Yeah. And, you know, I said years ago, the phenomenon is so strange, it protects itself. Because unless you're involved, and from so many people that have known experience, it's very hard to believe these things can exist.
Yeah.
But I deal with witnesses constantly, even in recent weeks, whose lives have been changed, from hunters and professionals, all kind of people who didn't believe any of these things could occur until they had their own encounter. And some of these people have a hard time dealing with it.
Well, and that's true. I mean, it doesn't fit with your 9-to-5 reality. And not only that, if the people around you don't corroborate your experience, you question, well, did I experience it? The thing that John talks about, the other UFO experiencer, he says there would be this fog. And I've also talked to somebody else about the electronic fog. Bruce Gergnon, he wrote about the Bermuda Triangle. Anyway, they talked about this interesting electronic fog that would appear, and then you really didn't want to be around because you didn't know what was going to happen. When John talks about it, he said that's when the UFO would manifest. This fog would appear, and then either the ETs or people, however they appeared, or a UFO, would just kind of just come out of the fog and into our dimension. And it
exactly.
was, you know,
and
go ahead.
This is going on in recent weeks and months. So down along the Derry and the Chestnut Ridge, we had an incident, I believe it was October last year, maybe September, October. Man's riding down the road at the base of the ridge, the bottom of the ridge. He says this thing suddenly, about 75 feet in front of him, suddenly appears out of nowhere. He can see it's about 7.5 feet tall from his estimate. It's very broad-shouldered, human-like shape. And he said, it's not solid. It's misty, foggy, only right there, nowhere else. He said, I'm watching this thing moving across the road. It's stooped over like it has bad posture. It's floating across the road into the field and disappears. And then with this recent huge cigar-shaped object that's being seen up in Cambria County in the last week by numerous people very low off the ground, we're talking within hundreds of feet from the reports we're getting. The one witness told me it was a very thick, dense fog in the area, and this thing suddenly appeared. And he said, this person knows aircraft, and he said, this thing would physically appear and physically fade and vanish and reappear and gone.
See, that's why I want to talk to you, because the more people hear these stories, the more likely they are, if they have their own encounter, to know there's somewhere to go with it instead of just going, well, what do I do, and forgetting it or something like that. This way, we have to keep documenting to give people an idea that if it happens to you, you're not crazy. You're one of the few, or now one of the many. Does that make sense?
Right. And it's so interesting because not only when I'm interviewing many witnesses, but I'm talking to many researchers in widespread areas of the country, and they're all getting similar reports. But you're not hearing about it because a lot of researchers are reluctant to even talk about or publish it.
Well, there's a little proprietary, I think, interest trying to keep everybody's stuff separate. But we have to collaborate. In my opinion, the more ammo you have in terms of connecting the dots, it took people a while to understand that UFOs and Bigfoot could be seen in the same place. Then when you have a UFO encounter, you also might have other anomalies that are paranormal events. In addition to that, you may have things in your house go crazy. The animals are going to tell you they're there. All this stuff. Or you might have a barometric pressure shift because the noise sounds different. or there's a smell that people call it. I can't remember what it's like an ozone, and I'm not sure what that is, but all of a sudden everything gets, for me, it was like it was a high altitude. You were in
the
a high altitude.
Associated with Bigfoot. You know, people talk about this rotten, terrible odor, which many people have reported. However, in many, many cases, there's no odor whatsoever. My theory is, and again, I don't have the answers, the explanations, but that the odor is associated with these creatures or whatever we're doing coming in and out of our physical reality as part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this stuff, as long as we keep it secret or put it in little tiny little boxes and separate it, we're not going to get anywhere. Once people start connecting dots and saying, well, this woman stepped, okay, here's the woman in Sedona, Jocelyn Buckner, I think, stepped from one area of the path across to another. At the time, she was hiking with a couple of other friends. They didn't see her. She could see them. And all she did was basically take 10 steps in a different direction. She had to retrace her path so that they could see her. And they thought she was gone for a while. And she was gone for, in her view, minutes. And they thought she was gone for about half an hour. That's what you describe as that little girl who was missing and then discovered in the same spot. To me, that's like a dimension shift.
Yeah. And, you know, these incidents we're talking about with the Bigfoot, the UFOs, the various cryptid encounters, which we didn't even begin to discuss.
Yeah.
They can appear anywhere. There's sporadic reports in many areas here in Pennsylvania. But there are certain areas similar to the Skinwalker Ranch. There are certain areas that, for whatever reason, the phenomena seems to target. And I know of one location in Fayette County, that for the last few years, everything was normal there. Then all of a sudden began to have paranormal phenomena, strange lights, footprints, Bigfoot sightings in recent months, I understand, UFO sightings, and it's an ongoing phenomena. And why it's going on, nobody knows.
Okay. You take people's reports from, does it matter what part of the country?
Oh, people can call me, and, you know, if I can, I'll try to connect them to researchers in their area. I deal mainly in Pennsylvania, but I'm glad to learn about the other reports from other parts of the country, and a lot of people like to just share their experience privately, and I'm glad to talk to them.
There's supposed to be a new report coming out of a similar situation, Skinwalker style, to Florida, and they have one. I know in Sedona has a ranch that's also the same kind of thing. So the more these things become, I think, public, the more we have information to look at and compare notes and do more research to figure out why it might be happening in a certain area, like a hot spot that you're talking about. What's the deal?
Well, the one thing that I found years ago, and it's definitely ongoing, many low-level, close-range UFO encounters and many encounters with Bigfoot, Thunderbirds, Black Panthers, other strange cryptids commonly occur in the vicinity of energy sources. So high-tension power lines, power plants, gas wells, gas lines, radio towers, reservoirs, goes on and on and on.
Radio towers, where there's hope. Hey, Stan, thank you. Thank you. We got to talk again because we just got the tip of the iceberg with this. But thank you so much. Your website, stangordon.info. Your books are available on Amazon. So looking forward to the next installment. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
And thank you for listening. If you want to get details, again, go to Stan's site, stangordon.info. And then you can also check out, I'll put some links on the blog, wendyscoffeehouse.com. In the meantime, keep your eyes open. Pay attention. Some of this stuff happens because it seems so unreal that people forget it. It's like, I don't have anywhere to go with it. Well, you do now. Okay, you can even call me. Or get on the website. Post your story. Anyway, Stan Gordon, UFO Anomaly Zone, a 24-hour UFO hotline to find out what all's going on. And there's so much right now that we can't even get into it. But I'm going back to do more with that video from the guy who's reporting his stuff up close and personal, the encounters he had at Skinwalker Ranch. Mind-boggling to see this all coming out publicly. It's about time. Till next time, stay curious. See ya. Okay, Stan.
Yo.
Hey, thank you.